Don't get lost in the waves of change.
190 pages, tens of hours of lawyers. One takeaway today is you now put on your listing agent hat when you meet with a buyer and you treat him the same way. So that's what you need to take away.
KGCI Real Estate On Air, keeping you informed and empowered as the NAR settlement brings seismic shifts to the real estate industry.
It's a consultation and a strategy. When you think of how people need to buy a home in this market, it takes great strategy. So why not strategize with that buyer? They need your help more than ever.
Depend on KGCI Real Estate On Air.
All right, there's one for the blooper reels. No worries about that. But I'm just coming in hot from Canada, like I was saying, man. Vancouver, all of our friends up there were asking about you, C3.
Yeah, I heard that was one heck of a trip.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. Of course, Nadia Habib and just all of our great friends up there in that neck of the woods. You know, that's a very special place, I got to tell you. And then I had the opportunity to join Glenn Sanford and Debbie on their boat in Simi Amu. I didn't even know how to pronounce that until I got there. It sounded like a ice cream thing, you know, Simi Amu. That's what it sounds like, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But Glenn's beautiful boat, Veronica and Tony Figueroa were there, and Kendall and Bill Bonner were there with us as
Lance
well,
Tuts.
And Lance Custon and Tabriz, his wife. We had a wonderful time.
Yeah.
But I got to tell you, if you're going to Canada anytime soon, you need to get the Nexus card, okay?
What is that?
It's kind of like a global entry, but it's if you're driving from like either the U.S. to Canada or the other one. There's like this fast lane that you can get in. And those stinking Canadian folks, they get ugly, like, because you can kind of go down in that lane and then put your blinker on and it's like they all made a pact. It's like, we ain't going to let any of these people get in. You know what I mean? So you're basically screwed sitting there in that fast lane because it breaks off. And anyway, so I guess we had U.S. license plates, so we were able to navigate our way in. Or you just wait for somebody to get on their phone and get through. But anyway, global entry is a must-have. That's a Cliff's Notes tip of the day. Got to have that. TSA PreCheck Clear is another one. And then now, Nexus, so you can get across the border faster.
Love it.
All right. And one last thing, Trellis, are you with us, sir?
Uh-huh, I am.
We need a quick update on Aaron Rodgers.
Ooh. I think his season is over, but his spirits are high.
His spirits are high.
Spirits are high,
and
season is over. Yes, indeed.
Yeah,
all right.
That's unfortunate.
And then, lastly, are the Cowboys going to go all the way this year?
I don't know. I'm going to be humble. I don't know.
You don't know.
I don't know. They'll go pretty far. How about that?
They'll go pretty
far. He doesn't want to make any rational
10-7 and back to the predictions back to the dumps again, right?
Yeah, we'll keep it humble. We'll keep it humble.
All right.
That's
okay.
It.
We've learned not to open our mouths too early here in Dallas. That's right. All right, folks. Like I said when I botched the intro flying in here, Robert Colello is a dear friend of mine. From San Diego of ours, not just mine. He's got a beautiful family, lovely wife, and we were in San Diego not too long ago and had an opportunity to spend some time with him at Pacific Coast Grill, I think it was, wasn't it? Let's bring Robert in here if we could. Robert, that was an amazing restaurant that you took us to the last time we got together.
You know, Cliff, it was awesome having dinner with you, my wife, C3, and you're a Slick Willie. See, guys, I put my credit card down in the beginning of the meal, and then Cliff went to the bathroom, came back at the end, and threw it back at me and said, your stuff's not good around here, and he paid for the meal. So I wasn't expecting that. So he is an honorable gentleman and a great guest. He was a guest in my town. I want to show him a good time, and we sure had one there at the Coast Grill, right on the Pacific Ocean on the sand. It was awesome.
Well, had it not been for you, we would have never known about that restaurant. So it was definitely one of those epic dinners. And right on the beach.
Oh, man. The waves.
You could feel the spray coming in. You know,
the sun was setting as we were having dinner. It was beautiful.
It was outstanding. Outstanding. Amazing. So anyway, boy, I got to tell you what. First of all, if you're watching this show, thank you for being here. But I would really like you to find a place to get comfortable and give this your full attention. You're going to meet what's behind Robert Colello and what drove him to where he is. This guy has got an incredible story, and we're going to start unpacking it here in just a little bit. But before we do, Robert, let's talk a little bit about what you're currently involved in. You're one of the top agents there in San Diego. Give us a little bit of background about your current business and and how you do it. You do it 100% referral, which is crazy. Tell us about that.
Absolutely. So I have a team of seven, and we're located here in San Diego, California. We cover from the border of Mexico up to South Riverside. Been here since 2007, came here knowing nobody, was a cold call cowboy, FSBOs, expireds, circle calling, doing all the normal stuff you're going to do when you don't know anybody and you need to get some money in the door and create a business. I'm from the East Coast. And every year I would analyze my business, and there became a point when I could not perform the clients that were coming back. And I decided to make the leap of faith to go from being a prospect-based-driven business to a referral-based-driven business back in 2009-10 timeframe, and haven't looked back.
You know, that's easy to say. I just made a decision to go from prospecting-based to referral-based, but that's really hard to pull off. I mean, because you're basically shutting down a pipeline, hoping that people have to, you know, either refer somebody to you or buy or sell, but you're basically working with, I mean, were you out on the streets holding up a sign, that kind of referral business, or how big was your sphere when you decided to make that switch?
So that's a great question, Cliff. So what I decided to do was this. I started my business in 05 in Miami Beach, Florida, in October. And they told me it would take 9 months to sell your first home. I sold 11 homes my first 90 days, calling FSBOs and expireds. Then I moved to Rochester, New York, and did the same thing. The problem was the weather wasn't as nice up there. And my wife's from South America. I told you we went out to eat. I like my women from the deep south. She's from Colombia. And so we had to get out of there. We lasted 8 months. So we came over here. I just rinsed and repeated, did the same thing. Got on the phone, started my business in June. And literally, you know, had my first escrow July 3rd. So it worked. What it didn't work for me is I didn't like chasing around people that didn't know me, like me, and trust me to get a large percentage of these people to continue doing business with me. But then there was those Debbie Downers that no matter what we did for them, how much service we brought to them, they just would give you the kind of like, yeah, you sold my home for 10% more than I could have, but I wish I would have done it myself still. And I got introduced to Brian Buffini. I got introduced to the referral-based business. I was a Mike Ferry agent up until then. And what I did was kind of a hybrid. You know, I had the business acumen from Mike Ferry and the drive and the discipline. And then I'm relational as well. I'm a DI. And so I could make friends with people and keep relationships. And I just made that segue. So my wife wanted to kill me. I'll be honest with you. My GCI that year went down $30,000. Like, we're just getting out of the bucket there. Went from $100,000 to $75,000. She's like, or $73,000. What are you doing? Well, the next year went from $73,000 to $304,000. It hasn't gone down since. I just felt like it was the right move for us. And we've been doing it ever since. So my fame to claim with clients is I'm 100% referral based. You'll never see me on a bus bench with someone sitting on my face. Either I do what I say I'm going to do for you and our team serves you, or I can't feed my four kids.
I haven't quite heard it put like that before. That's a writer downer though. I'll tell you, don't buy the bus bench ads. Break check, break check, break check. Okay. Wow. That's amazing. So, but one of the beautiful things about what you learned, smiling and dialing was, if they dropped you off on an island and you didn't know anybody, you could still, I mean, you sold 11 houses in your first 90 days. That is unbelievable. Absolutely. So it's probably a great way to start. But again, as soon as you can get over to more of a referral-based business, that should be everybody's goal. What advice would you have, Robert, for agents right now who are about a year in the business, who might be struggling a little bit? They're wondering where they should be spending their time. Do they need to be worried about building up referral business, or do they need to be out there hitting the streets, knocking on doors? What can you tell them?
They need to be on the streets, hitting doors, hitting phones, creating relationships, getting into networks, and putting in the work. See, this is the deal. In my life, I'm about profit. I'm about, what am I going to do that's going to yield the highest result, okay? And my time in ministry, my time with my family, and the time in business. What I saw, because I'm a student of what works and what doesn't work, I think marketing is a great thing. But I think we can all agree that we remember the guy on the billboard 10 years ago that's not there anymore. We remember the person on the bus bench. We remember that girl that was on the shopping cart every time we went in for 6 months or 2 years, and they're not there anymore. So for me, it just told me, maybe I'm stupid, maybe it's not right, but for me, it was, that doesn't work long-term. What does work long-term is profitability. My profitability, my bookkeeper has told me for the last 10 years, I'm the most profitable client he has, and he does mostly real estate and a bunch of other industries, and profitability will sustain a new agent. So a new agent does not need to be throwing their money at gimmicks. They don't need to be throwing their money at some marketing campaign for 10 grand, one shot, hope it works. They need to pull their sleeves up, smile, dial, and make a pile and have hope in their heart that that's going to happen. They need to be a student of scripts. They need to learn what they're going to say, because this is the deal. If you're always worried about what you're going to say, then you'll never hear what someone's saying to you. And my dad taught me a long time ago, the definition of a great salesman is we're not forcing anybody to do anything. We're helping helping someone get from where they are to where they want to go, navigating through the obstacles of getting there. And a lot of it is their own belief system. So if they feel like all you're worried about is a commission check, that's not going to help them tell you what you need to do to help them. So I learned early on, Mike Ferry was really integral in my business, teaching me to internalize my scripts. So as a new agent, what I would do is literally I would dedicate 1 hour a day to role play, and I'd dedicate 1 hour a day in the middle of the day to reading my scripts. I wouldn't even ask them to role play with me. Now, a lot of new agents might be afraid of that, but this is the deal. Fear is going to be your best friend. When you feel that fearful thing, that's what you need to do. When you feel like, should I ask that guy to be my role play partner? Should I go knock on that $4 million door? Should I pick up that phone? Should I ask that lawyer, that probate attorney, you know, could I be his preferred agent? Do it. Because on the other side of fear is where your success is going to be. The difference of me at a new agent and you at a new agent, if you're going to succeed or not, was just the fact that I was hungry. Like Les Brown said, I was hungry and I had no choice. I literally burnt the bridge. So that'd be my next suggestion to the new agent. Things are not as easy as they were, we can all agree, 6 months, a year ago. You need to burn the bridge. My wife brought me, picture this. We moved to San Diego in 2007 in April when the real estate market was crashing. Three kids, my wife was pregnant with the fourth. I don't blame her for this, but it was a pivotal moment back in June or July of 07. And I looked at her and I'm like, listen, don't ever bring one of those to me again. I didn't come to San Diego to go work for corporate America again. I came to start a real estate business, and that's what I'm going to do. And I just burnt the bridge. And I went through some hard times. You know, I went through bankruptcy. There was a lot of things that I paid for because the market was this market's easy compared to that market I was in. So I don't want to scare you about the market's not what it was 6 months, a year ago. But just know this. If you're willing to put the work in, you're willing to call for set by owners, you're willing to use other people's listings in your area to call around, you have business all around you. You just have to get focused. You got to get strategic and you got to go execute.
Man, I this is just music to my ears. You know, and you mentioned something, you mentioned hunger. And unfortunately, hunger is something that we just can't teach. You either have it
or you don't.
I mean, if we could, it would be great. Why is it, Robert, do you think that 88% of people who get a real estate license fail to renew it on the first anniversary?
Oh, that's a great question. Because everybody wants the easy button. When people think of real estate agents, I'm always really sensitive with my team to tell them, like, make sure you let my clients know, our clients know that, hey, I'm on a road trip with my daughter, or I'm on a business trip, or whatever. Because you know where they think we are most of the time? New clients, people that don't know how real estate really works, they think we're on the golf course in shorts and a t-shirt collecting checks. That's not what happens. And unfortunately, not only do the clients think that, the agents think that. That's this business is the most amazing opportunity you're going to have in your life to create a future that you could only dream and imagine, with a barrier to entry that is so low, the cost that's almost non-existent. Like, look at it. I make more money than most surgeons. And I didn't have to go to Harvard. I didn't have to go to med school. I just went to 1 year of junior college. And I only passed because I got a medical discharge to go to rehab. Listen, if you're willing to be a hard worker, if you're willing to be teachable. See, I'll tell you this right now. 88% of people fail is because they try to do it their own way. Oh, I'm going to get into real estate. I'm going to take a picture with my dog and everybody's going to love me. No. you're going to get into real estate, and you're going to find the most successful people, and you're going to do what they did until you master what they did. And then guess what? You can change things. I always say it like this. Don't reinvent the wheel. Go find out who's doing it the best. And then once you understand it, execute and do it, put some rims on the wheel. But don't reinvent the wheel.
Gary Keller, and you and I both know, you know a lot better than I do, but I heard him say one time that, you know, when you get into this business, that's not the time to be creative. You've got to learn blocking and tackling. And once you've mastered the basics, then you can look into other ways that, you know, you can kind of express your uniqueness or yourself. You were really tight with Gary Keller for a while. You were in his top 100, I believe. Is that right?
Yeah, I was blessed. You know, my last 3 years at Keller Williams, I was in Gary Keller's top 100 mastermind. Tons of respect for Gary Keller. The guy is a legend in the industry, has brought so much value to agents. And, you know, it was a great honor to be in that mastermind. And what I love most about the mastermind is Gary. And if you follow the good trainers like Mike Ferry, Gary Keller, Glenn, right? Glenn Sanford, like what they do to be relative and what they do to understand how they can really help. And I think Glenn does a masterful job of this, is they surround themselves around top agents. So the people that I was in the room with really made a big difference. Because let's just face it, if all we were is in the room with a talking head that's a billionaire, but there's no practical advice, there's nobody that I can say, okay, like James Vernon McGee said, you know, hey, keep the cookies on the bottom shelf so that everybody can get to them, then it'd be hard to make it applicable. And what I love being in those rooms is that there's people at all different levels. And my hope is I'm the lowest level in the room, because I don't go there, and anytime I go to an event, to be the big guy on the block. Matter of fact, I was 30th in North America for Keller Williams, and I had no idea. I was on vacation in Miami and came back. My wife did her first half Ironman there. She's a bigger man than I'll ever be. And it was an awesome dream come true bucket list kind of thing. And one of the agents in the office put a magazine there and wrote a note and said, hey, congratulations. I'm really excited. He's one of the elders there for your success, Robert. You've come a long way. And I'm like, what's he talking about? I open up the page. I was 30th in North America. See, this is the deal. I feel like if you go to masterminds, if you go to events just to strut like a peacock, you're not going to get anything more than a good picture of yourself there, whatever you're looking for. It's vain. You need to go there to grow. You need to go there and say, hey, who can I mastermind with? Who can I get something from? Who can I give something to? How can we be, you know, share our best practices so we can all get ahead faster? You know, my dad told me something as a kid I never forgot. He said, artists and salesmen have two things in common. You know what that is, guys? If they look at their work for too long and admire it, they're both going to be broke. If you don't go start painting another painting, by the time your painting's dry, you're done. If you don't go out looking for another sale, like I love what Mike Ferry said, start at zero. I love what Gary Keller said, the market of the moment. You know, these are the things that you learn when you're in the right rooms. So yeah, it was an honor being in a room with him. I've been blessed to be in great rooms with people like yourself, and I'm always learning.
Yeah, that reminds me, I was telling the story about the flat squirrel on Lab Coat Agents. I did an interview with Randy from Rooster yesterday, I believe it was. And you know, real estate agents today are kind of at that inflection point where some of them are probably wondering if they're in the right business, especially compared to what the market's been like in the past, you know, 2, 3, 4 years. And it's that old proverbial squirrel that walks out into the middle of the road and just sits there and stops and does this number. And then all of a sudden that Suburban comes along and boom, that squirrel becomes we call it a flying squirrel in Texas, especially after the sun bakes it a little bit on the ground. You can pick them up and throw them like a Frisbee. But the reality is that there are a lot of real estate agents who are just sitting there wondering what the heck to do, and they're going to get run over. So tell me, you were saying earlier that agents should be proactively going out and knocking on doors. What else? What other kind of great advice can you give agents? Internalize their scripts. What else do you have for them?
You got to have, there's four steps that you got to have in your mindset, okay? We got to bring this down to the simplest thing possible. If we overcomplicate this business, it will take us out. it's a very complicated business for people that chase every shiny thing. And it's a very simple business for people that stay in their lane. Okay. So the four things that I would say to do is have a vision. Okay. Have a vision for what you want your life to look like. Not now, 10 years from now. I was just in my garage yesterday working out on our gym that we have in there. We got an infrared sauna. We got a whole set up there. And I found a card that was on a vision board that I sent to myself in Rochester, New York. And it said, and I opened it up and it was a Porsche. And I opened it inside and it said, "It's yours, baby, go get it." And I was always, that was 2006. I was always casting vision of where I wanted to go. So you gotta have a vision, you gotta have a plan. How are you gonna get there, okay? And make it simple, okay? So you get the vision, the plan, and then have an action steps behind it. On the other side of action is where all your satisfaction is, okay? To the degree you're willing to get uncomfortable, to the degree you're gonna succeed. So now you gotta get good, the fourth thing is execution. You're only gonna get good at execution the more times you do something. So as a new agent, get used to failing. Get used to repetitious boredom. I always tell my kids, on the other side of uncomfortability is where all your success is. To the degree you're willing to be uncomfortable is to the degree you will succeed. Because the reality is this, everybody wants sexy, easy, especially in the days of InstaSham and Fakebook, and I call Snapchat, you know, quick lie, you know. But the deal is this, failure is the gift wrap of success. So get used to it. Because you will fail your way to success. And if you get into action, so we have to understand this. There's many highways, you know. Clip 3 just said, C3 said that, hey, he saw me go on a road trip with my daughter from Idaho through Zion, through Yellowstone to San Diego. How was I able to do that? One, I had a plan. Two, I had a vision, the experience I wanted for my daughter. And three, we had to get into action. We pushed the pedal. And then the fourth thing was we got efficient. We used our iPhone. We didn't try to figure the roadmap out. We got on our iPhone. And you know what? We had an amazing time. But I can tell you this right now. I could have had the vision. I could have had the plan. And I could still be sitting in Spokane, Washington at the airport because if we didn't turn the car on and push the gas and be willing to get out in front of some things, we'd have never had the wonderful adventure that we had. And that's been my story. I'm sure that's been your story. And you're going to find that's any successful person's story is that there's a mess that happens before the masterpiece, and you got to be willing to get into the mess.
You know, Robert, I'm sure there are people watching the show right now who are thinking, wow, this guy is, he's really good. He must have just had it, you know, been born with it or something, and life must have been, he must have been on a straight path to success. But your journey has had some bumps in it. You want to unpack a little bit about, let's go back to some of the days that you remember where you had some of your struggles. What were those like?
You know, I always say my life comes down to 3 D's. Divorce, dyslexia, and drug addiction. And the 4th D changed everything. Decision. I had to make a decision to do things differently. But before I made that decision, you know, my mom and dad were married twice to each other. And divorced twice to each other by the time I was 6 years old. And I lived between Oklahoma and New York, Long Island. So my dad's from Long Island, my mom's from Oklahoma. It's like water and vinegar, right? And so I remember many times driving back and forth to U-Hauls. I remember flying with companions when I was 3 and 4 years old from Oklahoma to New York. And I remember one time I'm flying there and I remember this lady, businesswoman sitting next to me, and she had the window seat that I wanted. And I was only 3 or 4. And I'm like, listen, I need to find out if we're near my dad. And I said, hey lady, are we almost to New York? And she'd like, no, are we almost there yet? No. And I realized I was annoying her because I was asking her. And she said to me, sweetie, I will tell you when we're there. So then I thought, how am I going to ask this lady? Because I'm very impatient. So I said, probably 10 minutes later, I said, excuse me, ma'am, can I ask you a question? She says, sure. I go, can you just tell me if you see something out the window? Do you see a lady that's in the middle of the water holding up a flame? And she looked at me and smiled, said, "Son, no, we're not. That's, we do not see the Statue of Liberty. We're not near New York." And I go, "Darn." She goes, "I'll let you know when we're there." So I remember being on my own a lot. You know, I mean, I remember experiencing things that kids probably didn't experience. And I remember when my mom and dad got together the last time and we moved to Long Island. My dad was in the finance business, and he moved from Long Island to Syracuse to start a finance company. And I was so excited because my family was back together, and I was about 5, 6 years old. And I moved to Syracuse, and a couple things happened. One, I was in a new environment, and two, they labeled me dyslexia. They labeled me with a learning disability, which I call them differences, okay? And it was hard. I'm riding the short bus to school. I'm getting picked on, beat up, and then my dad and mom get divorced. So now fast forward, I'm in middle school, and I find, you know, drugs. I find alcohol, and I liked it. And I got into drug addiction. And it started when I was, I remember blacking out the first time when I was a seventh grade. I was 12 years old, 13 years old, at my babysitter's house for New Year's Eve. My mom went out with her friends, and they thought it'd be cute to give me a little bit of strawberry daiquiri. And I found out where the rum was, and I thought it would be cute to put it, you know, half a cup of rum and half a cup of Pepsi. And it wasn't so cute when I woke up and their green Omni turned to be out to be mob as I blacked out and threw up over it. And that was kind of the beginning of me dibbling, dabbling in drugs. And through high school, I was pretty much high all through high school. And things came to an end right between my junior and my senior year. It was pretty much easy button for me before then. I could work the system. And then something happened to my junior and senior year. I couldn't work it anymore. Between my junior and my senior year, I got stabbed in the head that summer in a fight. I got a DWI. I came back to my senior year in boarding school, got kicked out of one school, two school, three schools that year, and went to my first inpatient drug rehab. And I remember coming out of that drug rehab thinking I didn't have really a bunch of issues, but realizing I had to deal with some things. And I went to my freshman year in college, and I relapsed, and everything they said would happened. And I realized my life was getting out of control fast. So I asked my dad for some help. They sent me to Miami Beach, Florida. And I went into an intensive inpatient drug rehab for 4 months and 4.5 months, and came out of there and lived in a 3/4-way house for about 6 months. And I met my wife. And when I met my wife, I was 6 months clean and sober, fell head over heels for her. And you've seen my wife, you know why I did, right? She's the full package. She's smart, she's sexy, and she's sweet. And she took me in, and I relapsed when she got pregnant, and she got pregnant when we were dating, and I relapsed when my wife was about 7 months pregnant. And it was one of the hardest times, but it was one of the best times in my life, because the Lord saved me from a life of destruction. Because I remember my wife was about to have our baby, and I remember thinking, I said I would never do this to my family. I would never have a family that break apart. And I'm about to break my family apart because my wife and me were not getting along very good, and she didn't know I was using drugs. And I came clean when my son was 3 months 3 months old, and I've been clean and sober ever since. But by the grace of God, you know, I was 21 years old when I got clean and sober. I should not have been clean and sober. I went to rehab, as I said, and over 40 people I went to rehab died. And that's some of the things that have kept me going. That when I realized that, hey, if I think that that's going to be an easier, softer way, it's not. There is no easier, softer ways. You know, matter of fact, today I'm filling out birthday cards for clients, past clients, and this guy comes up every single year, Mr. James Whitmore. And I keep him on there because James died, and he's one of my past clients. And I keep him on there because it makes me feel very grateful, because by the grace of God, I could have been one of those that died. And so, yeah, I didn't have it easy. I didn't come from, I didn't come from poverty by any means. My dad's a wealthy man, but I came from a broken home. I came broken, and I had some chips on my shoulder and some things against me. But I saw other people did it. I saw other people made a way, and I was addicted to making a way versus getting high, and that made all the difference.
Well, that's an incredible story. You know, I've told this often on the show, because I'm a big fan of Ziggs. When he was growing up, we used to sit in the second row at Prestonwood Baptist Church, just a few few feet down from Zig and the redhead. But Zig said that you can live about a week without food, you can go about 3 days without water, but you can't go a day without hope. When you That's were right. hopeless, Robert, how did God connect with you?
You know, that's a great question, Cliff. So going back to New York, when I went to my first rehab, came out of it, they brought me to AA. And in AA, they said, when it hurts bad enough, you'll hit your knees. Now I'm a recovering Catholic. I hit my knees all the way up, right? We go to church on Sundays. It was kneel, sit. And I'm like, I am not hitting my knees. Well, when I relapsed in college, I realized my life was starting to shrink in on me. It literally felt like I was suffocating. Everything was, I was lying, manipulating. I saw my life was not going anywhere fast. And my dad owned a large finance company. He told me at that point, you will never work for me. Now that was my contingency plan. You will never work for me. I will never ever have you have the opportunity to take over this business when I'm responsible for so many people's lives or kids' colleges. There's no way you're gonna get this handed to you like a blue blood drug addict. Ain't gonna happen. And then I realized, like, that was my crutch. I always thought that was there. All these people I used drugs with had, you know, working class parents. I had a millionaire as a father, and you know, he made it, no college degree. I'll make it. And my dad pulled the rug out of my underneath me. And I remember I'm sitting downstairs at the bar downstairs at his house, and I wasn't drinking. I was doing my homework. We live in upstate New York, and there's finished basements. And I'm just sitting there doing homework, and I'm a semester behind almost. And I just started crying out of nowhere. Like, I just realized my life was in the crap hole. And I remember what they said to me. And I hit my knees, and I felt like this warm hand touched the top of my head. And I hadn't read the Bible verse in Philippians 4:4-8, where it says, the peace that passes all understanding will guard your mind and your heart, that you will rejoice in all circumstances, making your request known to the Lord and your prayers and petition, and give it to God, right? I didn't know. I wasn't a Christian. I wasn't walking with the Lord at the time. But man, I felt this hand that I could only say was from God. And it touched me, and I hit my knees on the ground. And when this warm feeling came over me, and when I got to my eyes, I kid you not, my tears were completely evaporated. When it got to my heart, I was completely as settled as you could be. And I got up and I felt confident. I felt secure. I don't know where it came from. It wasn't for me by any means. And I went upstairs and asked my dad if he'd help me. And there was something inside of my voice and in my demeanor that my dad was like, he called my therapist up and like, I don't know what got into my son, but I've never seen him like this before. And he's serious. And that led me on a spiritual journey, Cliff. And it was about 4 years of a spiritual journey where I went from Catholicism to Tai Chi wisdom, Buddhism. And I really, what happened was I went from religion and I made the bridge over to spirituality, and I made the bridge over to relationship. And when my son was 3 years old and my daughter was 1 year old, I had this call on my heart to go to church, and I went to church and I gave my life to Jesus Christ and got saved in June of 2004. And my life's never been the same. I've had a relationship with God. I've been super blessed. Hey, I've had my down times. Absolutely. Do I deal with the voices in your head like all of us do, insecurities? Absolutely. But I have a lifeline that I never had before, that when I remember that the Almighty is always there waiting for me like a gentleman, and he has a hand waiting to pull me out of whatever I'm in, that I can grab it. I never had that before. I never had that comfort or that peace. So that's where I find the power to get through the day. And it's not my power. I reach out to God.
You know, Robert, I this has just come into my heart here, but I know there's people that are watching this right now who are in that, probably that hopeless, dark moment in their life. What word do you have for them to find, how can they find peace in this storm that they're in?
You know what? Call out to the Lord. If you don't know him, call out to him. His son wants to have a relationship with you. And know that the enemy is he's a liar. It says in the Bible, right? He's the accuser of the brethren, right? He's the accuser. And I heard Mike Ferry say this a long time ago. He's like, you cannot control your first thought. You can control your second thought and what you do with it. So my suggestion would be to you, as it says in the Bible, capture all your thoughts, render them on to Jesus. What does that really mean? That just means look at them. Like, is that a real thought? Like, am I going to go broke right now? You know, it's your day one in real estate and you're fearful and you're having all these apprehensions. Or maybe it's your second or third or fifth year in real estate and you've been in a market where you were an order taker and you thought you were a salesman. Well, guess what? Reality, the Beastie Boys said something a long time ago. Stay true to yourself and you should never fall. Well, I love that as a kid. I remember they had it spray painted on my street in New York. And I read that as a little kid. And I'm like, that makes a lot of sense. If you stay true to yourself, you shall never fall. Right now, if you find yourself in a situation where, as Zig Ziglar used to say, I love this. He's like, there's more money. There's more month at the end of my money. Like, I got more bills than my money can pay, right? Well, if you find yourself there, take responsibility. And listen, let's face it. The market turned fast. You can easily blame the market, or you can just say, hey, I need to pivot. What are the things I wasn't doing before? What are the things I should do? And as we talked about before, Cliff talked about it, I'm talking about it. Find someone that is succeeding in this market and be a good manager of your money. You know, one of the things that was such a blessing to my wife and I is that when money was coming in, like in barrels, we were sending it out as just as fast as it was coming. You know, I read a book called The Richest Man in Babylon a long time ago, and that was a pivotal book. It tells you to give 10% of your money away, save 10%, and invest 10%. I try to save and invest more than 10%, and we put it out there. Like in 2015 or 21, we invested 50% of our income after taxes invested. How do you do that? Don't follow the crowd in real estate. Because so many of the crowd are all flash and no cash. And they're in this business today, driving a 7 Series BMW, wearing a Rolex they can't afford, and living in a house that they can barely figure out how they're going to make their mortgage payment. They think that's faith. Hey, I'll figure it out next month, I'll make the mortgage. That's stupidity. Control your expenses, get a bookkeeper, understand your finances, and understand this too. Romance without finance is ignorance. If you can't pay for it cash, or if it's not responsible, do not do it. Don't do it because you feel like you're going to have a good month or a good quarter, or you got all hyped up on a motivational tape, or you watch too much YouTube and you're like, I can do it. So then you go book a trip to Bali, but you haven't made a sale for 6 months. Like, listen, you'll find yourself in a bad situation if you do that every single time. But if you learn from the past, like I had to learn, listen, I went to bankruptcy in 2008. And I could have been a complete victim. I didn't buy a big screen TV. I didn't buy no Hummer. I literally fed my family. Up until that point, my FICO scores in the high sevens in my early 20s. I owned multiple pieces of real estate before I turned 23. So I could have said, worries me, the market, the economy. Well, I used that setback for a major comeback. And before I bought my first house in San Diego, I made sure we had reserves in the business. We had reserves in our personal life. I make sure my wife would tell you, I'm very conservative with what we have because I know that, hey, we're in a cyclical business. And I would share this with you. This is the greatest opportunity of your career to catapult yourself into crazy success. And you might be saying to yourself, this guy's crazy. The sales are down. We're losing 10,000 agents a month and our sales are restricted 18%. No, I'm not crazy. I'm going to tell you why. When a hurricane comes in, there's a thing called the eye of the storm. The eye of the storm, when it comes over your town or your house, you're going to feel like, hey, it's safe to go outside. It's one of the most dangerous times to leave your home. Now, most people, when the business feels calm and everything, they just sit there in the middle and retract. When business is retracting, they retract. You need to push into your fear, push into uncomfortability, and push into the storm that we're in right now. When the market expands again, and it will expand, we retract and expand. This is just look at the cyclicity of this market over the last 20 years. You're going to be pushed right into there. And guess what? In the middle, guess where they're going to be? In the middle. People that have been pushing in and doing the work and picking the phone up and doing what they need to do, the repetitious boredom we talked about, they're going to be taken away. That's why my business went up 400% from 2012 to 2013, because I pushed in. I had no choice. I had to feed my kids and I had burnt the bridges. So that'd be my suggestion to you guys, burnt the bridges and push in.
No, that's exactly right. You know, we talked about so many things here, delayed gratification. We talked about, you know, a rising tide raises all ships. That's what's going to happen here. when the market turns back the other way, and it's going to you're going to reach levels you've never reached. I totally preach that and believe it. It happened to me personally in 2008 through the Great Recession, and some of the best people in real estate that I know today started their career in 2007, 8, and 9. And because those people learned that this is not about order taking, this is about you being the one driving the bus, and you got to get out every day and go, not just go kill your paycheck, but you got to go out and be disciplined, persistent, and just be a force. And that's what I think that we have a generation of kids that don't know about delayed gratification. And we've got a whole generation of realtors, because 2008, how many years ago was that? 15, 16, almost years ago? I don't know how many agents had their license back in. Some of us did, you know, but probably 80% didn't have a license or haven't been through a cycle like this. So now's the time to hunker down and to really iron sharpens iron, internalize those scripts, be disciplined about what you do. You know, make a dollar accountable whenever you spend it on something. Don't be chasing squirrels and picking up shiny objects off the ground. Robert, you have, I mean, you nailed it. There is more value in what Robert said today than we've had in a long, long time, Robert.
Yeah. And success isn't always sexy, you know?
It's boring.
It's really kind of just the repetition and the consistency over time that pays off. You know, when you internalize something to where it becomes natural and you don't have to think about what you're going to say, it becomes easier. And then you can really, like Robert said, listen to what the, you know, customer or the consumer is looking to achieve.
Yeah.
And you can help them reach their goals a lot quicker.
Yeah. And Cliff, can I say something that would help, I feel? Raise your standards in this market. Don't lower them. Do not deal with people that are unqualified. Never go on an appointment that's not qualified. Pre-qualify everybody. Ask them the hard questions. Ask them if they're going to list with you when you come out. Are they interviewing other agents? Get them pre-qualified. You need to get all your documents into the lender. We need to run your credit. Do not get desperate because you feel like you're desperate. That's when you need to pull in and be more disciplined. See, we got a hit too, just like everybody else in the income. But guess what? We do the right things at the right time. I didn't sweat it at all. Our net worth has gone up in the last few months, not down, even though our income went down a little bit, because we were disciplined in putting our money to work. We were disciplined in the kind of clients we're working with. Be disciplined. And it, just keep this phrase in your mind. I heard as a young salesman, if you generate, you don't have to tolerate. And if you generate, you won't tolerate.
Also heard it said that poor people work for their money and rich people make their money work for them. And that's a part of a mindset. You know, poor is a mindset. Broke is temporary, right? So maybe this mindset that we're in, if you've got a victim mindset, you're never going to get out of the hole. It's just not possible.
You got to condition your mind. You have to understand, it's like Zig Ziglar said, we're putting deposits in a bank account, that life is always going to be withdrawing, always, even when we're not asking. And if you don't put the right deposits in, you're going to overdraw. And nobody ever goes in the bank to put deposits in. People come in all the time to withdraw. So make sure you're putting the right books in your mind, the right things. And have, guys, I would just say this. I was looking at this book last night, Ultimate Selling Power. And guess what I found in here? This is the plane ticket that I took from Rochester, New York to San Diego, California in 2007 when I was broke as a joke. And I have what's called Islands of Remembrance. You see that for sale sign behind me? That's my first for sale sign,
Florida.
Miami Beach, Florida. You got to make sure that you are, my dad told me as a kid all the time, who motivates the motivator? The motivator. You need to be motivated, you know? And if you do that, you just might end up in a book like I did, Your First Home, you know, which I never could imagine. And I would say this is a really good book for parents, Finishing Strong. And keep that as one of your mental philosophies. It doesn't matter how we start the race as a parent, as a business owner, as a person, it doesn't matter how the middle goes. Only thing people are going to remember is the end of it. So continue to push strong. And I like Think and Grow Rich. And my number one book of all time, which I'll end on, would be the Bible.
Yeah. Basic instruction before life ends, right?
That's it.
That's it. Robert, you're an amazing friend, business partner, a heck of an agent down there in San Diego, a wonderful husband and a great dad. And we are just so proud and privileged to have you on the show. C3, I got to tell you, man, he's got enough stones to put his cell phone number out. Appreciate that, man. I think your phone's going to ring here, and somebody that really needs
you. I don't answer my phone. My assistant does, so she'll field the calls.
Okay, very good. Well, my brother, we're going to look forward to seeing you in just a few short weeks here in Las Vegas at ExpCon. It'll be great to fellowship and hopefully have a chance to break bread with you. Is your wife going to be with you? I'm sure, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
She's always by my side.
Excellent. Well, C3 will be there. Karen's coming. So we're going to look forward to spending some time with you guys. I just want to tell you, I'm so thankful to have you on the show today, C3. Just amazing. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you for watching. Look Robert up. Touch base with him. He won't do anything but make your life better if you just get around him. Proximity's everything. We always say that, don't
That's
we?
It.
Yeah.
This is going to be the largest transfer of market share we've ever seen between agents in history.
KGCI Real Estate on Air, keeping you informed and empowered as the NAR settlement brings seismic shifts to the real estate industry.
You treat your buyers just like you do a seller. You get a consultation, you pitch, and you compete for the value you will deliver for the fee you're willing to accept.
Stay informed, stay prepared. Depend on KGCI Real Estate on Air.